Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for holding, and good morning, and welcome to the ABN AMRO Bank Q2 2016 results presentation, hosted by Mr. Gerrit Salm, Chairman of ABN AMRO Bank. During today's call, all lines will be in a listen-only mode, but after the presentation, there will be an opportunity for you to ask your questions. Now to Mr. Gerrit Salm, Chairman of ABN AMRO Bank. Please go ahead, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm here accompanied by the CFO, Kees van Dijkhuizen, the CRO, Wietse Rahorn, Head of Treasury, Erik Bosmans, and Bies Donker, Head of Investor Relations. We will give a short presentation about the results, and then we get the famous Q&A. Looking at the financial highlights, the underlying net result for Q2 was up 10% compared to Q2 last year. We think that's a solid performance. Earnings were driven by improved net interest income. We had low impairments, and we had a one-off gain on the sale of Visa Europe. We will pay an interim dividend of 0.40 per share. Looking at the key developments in the economic environment in the last quarter, the rather unexpected outcome of the Brexit referendum is expected to affect the European economy through a lower rate of the pound, but also through a continued low interest rate environment. Up till now, ABN AMRO has been able to cope quite well with the low interest rate environment. NII was at or above 1.5 billion already for eight quarters in a row now. However, if the ECB decides to become even more aggressive in their negative interest rate policy, this will impact results going forward. In the meantime, the Dutch economy is doing well. It continued to grow in the last two quarters by 0.6% each quarter, and that is for ABN AMRO, of course, a positive economic environment. Sustainability remains high on our agenda. We launched an online application that assists our commercial real estate clients determining energy savings measures, and we have made available 1 billion to provide in loans for investments in these kind of measures. Other initiatives include a second 500 million green bond and the launch of a national social impact bond, as well as a fund allowing clients to co-invest in loans to private sector companies in emerging markets. We will address our cost base, which we judge as too high. Significant cost savings are identified in support and control functions across the bank. We will simplify the operating model across the bank. If we look at the cost base for support and control functions, that's around about 800 million, and we intend to reduce this cost by 25% or 200 million. This is both staff and non-staff related costs. Significant part of this cost saving will be realized next year. We are also identifying additional cost savings in other areas of the bank, not only to lower our cost income ratio, but also to free up resources for digitalization and innovation. Once there is more clarity on the impact of Basel IV, we will update our financial strategic targets beyond 2017. We continue to provide innovative solutions for our clients. Clients are now able to arrange their investments on the stock exchange through our mobile app. We launched an app which enables payments requests through WhatsApp. A highly successful app has already been downloaded and used by 100,000 people. Bringing together the world of fintechs and ABN AMRO, we opened Econiq, a fintech accelerator, where fintechs and ABN AMRO staff meet to develop and test ideas. Going forward, we also identified areas for controlled growth. Within the corporate bank, we will start offering existing products and services to corporate clients in neighboring countries with a limited number of FTEs on the ground using the existing infrastructure of Amsterdam. We will also extend our global ECT clients business in sectors such as natural resources and food in the coming years. For retail clients, we will further focus on support in pensions and financial planning, while in the private bank, we will focus more on demand-based segmentation. Also, we will take further steps in digitalization and straight-through processing of high-volume products. On slide 3, you can see how we perform on our financial targets in the first 6 months. The fully loaded Core 1 ratio improved by 40 basis points to 16.2%, and we will continue to grow capital as long as Basel IV is not finalized. Return on equity was 13.1%. That's above our target range of 10 to 30%. Of course, there's a cyclical element in it because of the rather low impairments, which are below the through-the-cycle range. The cost-income ratio was 61.8%. Case will now go further into the financial results. Case?
Thank you very much, Gerard. Good morning, everybody. On slide 4, you can see that the underlying result for the second quarter of 662 million was 10% higher compared to last year. And as you, of course, are aware, we took an additional provision of 271 net of tax for the SME derivatives assessment, lowering our reported profit to 391 million. Our regulatory levies were limited, only 12 million this quarter. In retail banking, underlying profit improved on the back of a book profit for the sale of Visa Europe. NII increased further, but fees and commissions were lower because of volatile markets. Underlying profit for private banking decreased due to increased expenses and higher loan impairments. Corporate banking profited from lower impairments. On slide 5, you can see, as Gerard already mentioned, that we have been able to keep NII around or above 1.5 billion for 8 quarters in a row. Compared to last year, both for mortgages and corporate loans, margin improved, although volumes decreased for most loan types. At the end of the quarter, we again lowered our deposit rate for retail clients to 40 bips. Slide 6 on fees shows you that similarly to Q1, market uncertainty and volatility has negatively impacted fees. And we see this especially in the retail and private bank. Capital market solutions benefits actually somewhat from the volatility, especially in the clearing business. Other income recovered from the low result in Q1 and included a 116 million book gain on Visa Europe. CVA, DVA, FVA were around zero. Expenses, slide 7, were practically flat compared to the second quarter 2015 and 5% lower compared to the last quarter. Last quarter, regulatory levies were 98 million, whereas this quarter, as said, we recorded only 12 million. Levies were zero in the second quarter of last year. Number of FTEs decreased slightly compared to last year. However, more external staff was hired for projects. With respect to loan impairment, slide 8, you can see that impairment charges remained low at 54 million. Overall cost of risk was 9 bips. This quarter, the IPNI release was 49 million. Both 2015 and 2016 saw IPNI releases, which partly explains the below-the-cycle cost of risk. If you strip out the benefit from the IPNI, impairment charges are lower year-on-year. Witse will now elaborate on risk on the risk and loan portfolio developments.
Thank you, Kees. Good morning. Move to slide 9. The decrease in impairment charges was largely attributable to commercial clients, and it's in the reflection of the continued benign economic situation in the Netherlands. This was offset by additions in international clients, mainly there related to our ECT client book, and I will elaborate on ECT clients later in this presentation. The impaired ratio for the total customer loan book was 2.7%, unchanged from year-end 2015. Allowances for impairments decreased marginally in all portfolios, resulting in a total coverage ratio decreasing to 50.8%. Impairment charges for residential mortgages remain low as the Dutch housing market continues to improve. Prices rose in all regions and all price categories. The annualized cost of risk remains low at 2 basis points for the quarter. If we look to the loan-to-market value continuing to decrease, then it is at this moment at 7.9%, also due to extra redemptions. A couple of words around ECT, slide 10. The portfolio, the ECT client portfolio, grew on balance by 4% compared to Q1, supported by the strengthening of the dollar by 2.5%, and the growth we saw was in all the three segments of ECT. The oil price remained at low levels. This has an impact on the energy sector, especially for offshore service companies, as oil majors postpone their investments. This has impacted the level of impairments. For all of the ECT clients, impairments were 93 million for the quarter, up from 18 million in Q2 2015. About two-thirds of the impairments were in energy and one-third in transportation, and commodities was close to zero. The cyclical nature of ECT clients is reflected in our lending policies, financing structure, advance rates, and risk management. As some clients currently face challenging market circumstances, such as the price of oil, dry bulk, container market, they are subject to stringent risk monitoring. In addition, sensitivity analysis and stress testing are regularly being conducted by ourselves. Last quarter, we updated you on the risk sensitivity analysis on our transportation portfolio. As expected, we see an increased inflow in offshore support vessels, containers, and dry bulk. Impairments incurred the first 6 months are, however, in line with the bandwidth of that risk sensitivity analysis. Moving to slide 11, the oil and gas-related portfolio consists of the energy clients portfolio and a small part of the transportation clients portfolio, approx 7 billion we're talking about here, which is less than 3% of our total loan portfolio. As market circumstances have deteriorated, we have updated our sensitivity scenario for the oil and gas related portfolio, anticipating a lower for longer oil price. And we assume that reductions in capital expenditures at the oil majors continue for a longer period than we had envisaged in Q1, and that the oil price stays between $30 and $60. In the updated scenario, impairment charges in the coming 6 quarters until year end 2017 could be in the range of 125 to 200 million. We noticed that the clients we serve are preparing for a prolonged downturn by requesting credit restructuring in a relatively early stage. We therefore also transfer files to a watch status as soon as we see signals that credit facilities are becoming subject to renegotiations, which is a relatively early phase. Overall, the portfolio, the ECT portfolio, continues to remain within our risk appetite limits for this sector. Gerrit, over to you.
Okay, thank you, Witse. To wrap up, we are pleased that in the current rate environment, net interest income continued to prove resilient. Going forward, this may become a bigger challenge if the ECB decides to further lower rates. We will focus on reducing cost and optimizing efficiency, while at the same time investing in digitalization, innovation, and controlled growth initiative. Thank you very much. Operator, can we open the call for questions?
Certainly, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now start the Q&A session. On behalf of the company, we kindly ask you to limit the number of questions you have to three. In order to ask your question, please press star one now. So star one for your questions. Go ahead, please. First question comes from the line of Mr. Anton Krajacuk from UBS. Your line is open.
Good morning, and thanks a lot for taking my questions. Just two questions, please. The first one on net interest income. Can you please talk us through the main moving parts that have helped your margins this quarter? In particular, I'm interested in the repricing of the mortgage back book. Do you think that this trend will continue in the coming quarters? And secondly, on costs, please, you are guiding for 200 million gross cost saves, but how shall we think about the absolute cost development of the group going into 2017 and maybe even 2018? Is it fair to assume that if revenue environment is difficult, you'll try to deliver an absolute reduction in costs, or would that be too ambitious? Thank you.
Well, thank you, Anton. With respect to NII, the margins, I think we improved further on mortgages in the first half of the year. As we already guided before, that is something we expect the whole year, better margins on mortgages. because they are refinanced and old mortgages 10 years ago were at low levels, spread levels. However, that is coming to an end next year. With respect to margins, we also improved the margin on deposits. We've lowered deposits from 90 bips in retail, for instance, 12 months ago to 40 today. So that, of course, also helps. And in the corporate loan book, we have been able actually also to reprice a bit better compared to last year. Having said that, if you look at volumes and compare, for instance, with, say, 12 months ago, then volumes of the total loan book is around 2% lower than 12 months ago, the total loan book. This year, until now, there is a small increase in the loan book. That's more or less the drivers, I can tell you. With respect to cost, I understand your question on absolute levels, and indeed, you see income growth, of course, more modest compared to the last couple of years. It's too early to tell and to give a reaction on your question with respect to the absolute level. But as you can understand, that we have had, of course, some increases in the last couple of years due to lower interest rates, which increases in the pension costs, and also levies, which increased by around 150 million in 2 years or 3 years' time. We, of course, want, also with the measures we've taken right now, to curb as much as possible our cost level. But we cannot guide yet on your specific question here. It's too early.
Thank you. And just as a follow-up, when can we expect to hear more on the cost initiatives that you have identified? And will there be any restructuring charges linked to those as well?
Yeah, I think so. In the rest of the year, we hope to, as promised in Q1, we guided that in the second half this year we would come with measures. And that is still our time frame.
Thank you so much.
Next question comes from the line of Mr. Jean-Pierre Lambert of KBW. Your line is open, sir.
Thank you. Good morning. First question is related to the stress test. It seems like the Citi portfolio performed well in the stress test. However, there was more stress in terms of corporate SME and mortgages, so perhaps a few comments on your side for this. And do you think the stress test will have an impact on the potential dilution or not of the domestic surcharge? Second question is related to the loan loss charge profile for ECT on a quarterly basis. We had an increase this quarter. It's probably seasonal, and I was wondering how you see the quarterly profile until the end of the year. Thank you.
Maybe some words from my part on the EBA stress test. If you look at the assumptions behind the stress test, especially the Dutch economy was heavily stressed. It's far more effects on growth, on unemployment, and also on housing prices than the countries around us. And that means that we were, compared to other banks which are less dependent on the Netherlands, that we got a big hit. At the same time, also after stress, we ended up with a very decent capital ratio, and from the three largest Dutch banks, we ended up with still the highest capital ratio. So we will, of course, see what the ECB will, how they will take this into account in their SREP. If you look, if your question about the Dutch additional capital demand, which is coming from DNB, they will probably not change their policy until there's further clarity on Basel IV.
Thank you.
Yeah, Jean-Pierre, happy to take the question on ECT. If we look roughly what happens actually in the market, and you take our book actually, which is phrased on slide 11, we see some positives in the upstream part of the portfolio, as of course we are presently at somewhat higher oil price levels compared to the beginning of this year. We have ended the redetermination of the price deck in spring, where we were able to lock in quite a low oil price for all the borrowing bases, and still we see a lot of clients have sufficient headroom there. So I'm less concerned there. On the other hand, we see a more severe impact as a result of the lower oil price on the more offshore type of services companies, offshore drilling, support vessels. Well, that's exactly the reason why we have increased our sensitivity analysis there. Your question was actually kind of an outlook. Well, we never given a real outlook. Some anticipation we can have here is that at least what we have seen in the first half, which was for the whole book, including commodities, it's around 140 million. What we expect, given how the market develops, that the second half will not be lower. But again, I don't have the crystal ball, so I cannot precisely guide you there. It's fair to say that we have a very stringent risk management monitoring on all the clients which we have been putting on watch or which are in EverEarner.
And sorry, just to follow up, how did the Citi portfolio perform in the stress test, if you may comment? If I look at the specialized financing line and provisions and coverage, it seems to perform quite well in the stress test. So can you confirm that?
The details on the subsectors were not being provided publicly, but you are right. If you compare it, let's say, with the Dutch mortgage portfolio, there was a better, better behavior of the ECT portfolio in the stress test.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next question comes from the line of Mr. Daniel Dotoy of JP Morgan. Your line is open, sir.
Hi, good morning. I just have, three questions. The first one actually was on mortgage volumes. In terms of new production market share, 20% being, I think, the highest it's been in several quarters now, while the stock of mortgages remains flat. Now, you also mentioned that contractual redemptions are on the rise. So just wondering, in that context, how realistic it is to keep the book flat going forward. That's my first question. The second one was just on the cost bridge, following up on Anton's earlier question, the cost bridge from 2016 to 17. Now, just wanted to confirm here if I'm thinking about it correctly, but when I look at TOPS 2020 and retail digitization, that sort of yields net cost savings of just under 200 million based on, I think, your presentation last quarter. And then on top of that, you get a bit of cost inflation. And if I say that's around 2%, I guess that equates to about 100 million year on year. And then on top of that, you've today announced additional 200 million in cost savings, of which a significant amount is to be realized in 2017. So I guess my question is, what is a significant amount that we should expect to see in 2017? And if I add that all together, does that not imply that you will see quite a material reduction in absolute costs in 17 versus 16? That's my second question. And my third question was on your growing in corporate banking in neighboring countries, Germany, France, and Belgium. What sort of the rationale for doing so? Is that you following your clients abroad, or is it just attractive ROEs that you see in those markets, or is it more a reflection of the organic growth opportunities in the Netherlands? Thank you.
Yep. Okay. Thank you. Looking at our mortgage book, it was stable in the first half year, so we were able to keep it flat, and that's also our ambition for the future. Looking at the medium-term developments of the total mortgage market in the Netherlands, we also expect that to be flattish, although price rises, which are now occurring in the Netherlands, will of course have a positive effect on the may have a positive effect on the total mortgage book. So on balance, we still aim our mortgage book to be flat. As far as the guidance you ask for the cost development year on year, 16-17, we cannot give you that guidance. We did present, as you've seen, our our intention to decrease substantially our overhead costs through supportive functions. We are now still engaged in looking at costs cutting possibilities elsewhere in the bank. But at the same time, we also want to invest more money in digitalization and innovation and growth initiatives. So it's too early to give a guidance on the cost development 16-17. Looking at the corporate bank activities in neighboring countries, we are already active in lease and factoring. So what we are doing there is to broaden our product offering also to other products of the bank that can be seen as an extension of the Dutch experience and expertise we already have, and also using the infrastructure we have already in the Netherlands. So that means that the marginal costs can be relatively low.
Okay. Can I just follow up on costs? When you talk about a significant portion of the 200 million to be realized in 2017, is that more than half of that, or how should we think about that?
Well, we need to take some time in order to implement these kind of things. If we say significant, it's more than a proportion of the coming 4 years.
So it's more than. Sorry, I didn't catch the last part.
It's more than. We have a 4 years horizon. So if the amount we mentioned is for the 4 years period. And it will be more than proportional in the first year.
So more than 50 million in the first, okay, understand. Thank you.
Next question comes from the line of Mr. Tarik Almejad of Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Your line is open, sir.
Hi, good morning, everyone. A couple of questions, please. First, on costs, can you give a first indication what will be the restructuring charges for the 200 million? I think that's very relevant. And the second question on the ECT stress test, your own stress test. So, I mean, tell me if I understand it properly, but you estimate like 125 to 200 million in the next 18 months. And if I look at what you've booked in first half in your fact spreadsheet, that's 140 million already. So is that the way to look at it? And secondly, can you update us on the shipping part? What's the stress test on that? How you can update it post Q1? Because in Q1 it was interesting. In mild scenario, you gave 75 million. It would be interesting to see how that has changed. Thank you.
Case on cost?
Yeah, restructuring charges, unfortunately, too early to mention, because there we need actually not only the millions we have now given you, but also the headcount reduction. That is what we are working at, and we'll first give to our employee council, and then of course we know what we have to take as a restructuring charge, but that will become clear in Q3. With respect to cost in general, I think that also refers to the question before. You mentioned TOPS and digitalization and the cost operation. There are, of course, also other developments. Interest is still declining, which means that our pension costs next year will increase compared to this year, like they increased this year compared to last year. And the same is still true also for levies. We do not have the full amount of levies this year. There will be some increase there as well. So those elements are also part of the equation, I would say. An ECT,
yeah, let me take that. Actually, there are two questions. No, you cannot compare the revisit scenario on the oil impacted book with the 141 impairment charge. Let me explain that. I mean, on the slide 10, the impairment charges year to date, half year, for whole ECT is 140 million. but that's including three books. The commodity clients book, in which we do not see anything of severe impairments at this moment. It's including the energy clients book of around 5.5 billion, and some of the transportation clients. So the way you have to look into it is that the 140 is built up of impairments in energy, which is around for the half year 80, transportation, shipping, which is around 40, and the remaining part, 20, is commodities. And part of that 140 is in the revisit sensitivity analysis for the oil price impacted book. And as we have said, that if we look to that book, actually, roughly 7 billion, in the first half year, we have seen as a result of prolonged low oil prices, and we gained more insight in the capex plans of all the oil majors who really cut their capex plans, and we needed to adjust somewhat that scenario. And what I said as a reaction on the question of Jean-Pierre in terms of the outlook was dealing with the outlook for whole ECT. So that's including this oil book part. Is that helpful?
I mean, partly. To be honest, I don't understand very much the part on ECT. So how the 125.20 overlaps with the 141? I mean, I don't get that.
That's very simple. I mean, that is the part of energy, which counted for the last half year of around 80 million. And that's a small part of transportation, which we call the offshore vessels, and that dealt with an impairment of around 10 million. So actually that amount, in total the 90 million, gives you an idea about the 125 to 200.
Okay. Cool. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Next question comes from the line of Mr. Bruce Hamilton of Morgan Stanley. Your line is open, sir.
Thanks. Yep. Morning, guys. A couple of questions from me. So firstly, just looking at your sort of capital levels and the SREP process, it sounds like it's too early to tell whether the adverse shock in the EBA test will have any impact on the SREP minimum requirement. But maybe just looking at how you think about the management buffer given the new Pillar 2 guidance split between guidance and required. I mean, we're assuming about 100 bips of management buffer above the 12.5 minimum, including D-SIFI. But does that sound too conservative? So I'm interested in that, firstly. Secondly, assuming we get some clarity on the final Basel proposals early next year, and I'd be keen to check if that squares with when you're expecting clarity, how quickly would you look to address the capital return plans? I mean, could that happen in 17, or do we need to look well beyond, or what are the other sort of hurdles to get through? And then thirdly and finally, just on the energy book, the new guidance you've given us, I think if I go back, before you talked about oil at sort of around $30 a barrel, so it wasn't quite clear to me if we're now talking about oil between 30 and 60, but for a longer period, why the increase? So if you could just sort of clarify that a bit, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Thanks, Bruce. With respect to capital levels, indeed, we get a new SREP process where there is where the Pillar 2 guidance, the Pillar 2 will be split in two parts, one part being disclosed, the other not, one MDA relevant, the other not. However, of course, you have to cope with that as well. With respect to management buffer, we have not yet decided what kind of level. I mean, you see in the market between 50 and 100 bips, actually, but we have not decided yet what we will take, and that is something we will decide also when we know more about Basel IV. Basel IV, when do we expect results? Actually, of course, that is getting more and more clear. We have, of course, seen now everything is presented now, the KISS, the impact, they're looking into that as we speak. We'll start discussing again the committee in September, and then, of course, we hope in the next couple of months to get a bit more clarity. Yeah, well, our experience of the last 2 years, I think you mentioned it before, it's always Christmas Eve when they send the stuff. We'll see, but December, finally, perhaps beginning of Jan, because then the heads of supervision will join, I think, somewhere in the second week of Jan, at some moment in time there. We hope that they will stick to that, because it is necessary that there's more clarity in the market around Basel IV. It has taken long enough, we would say. Yeah, capital return plan then, I think that is something we are looking into right now. And of course, then you have to decide on, first of all, is there excess capital? Secondly, will you do it in a dividend stream, or will you do it in a one-off? You can do buybacks, whatever. I mean, so we have not decided that yet. And energy, I think, Risa.
Yeah, sure. Bruce, I understand the question, because indeed the first analysis was made in Jan on 2030 Brent. Reason why we increased our sensitivity at this moment, while at this moment Brent is around 50, is in combination. It's in combination of prolonged lower oil prices, indeed in a range of 30-60. But more important, actually, we gained more insight in the fact that the big oil majors globally have cut quite dramatically their capex programs. And that really hits the more earlier in the chain type of companies, offshore drilling, offshore support type of companies. So there's a kind of a lag and a time lag in improvement there. And exactly that is the reason why we need to increase our sensitivity analysis in terms of modeled impairments. And it's good to mention also it's modeled impairments, because I said again, also in Q1, we take as an assumption that there will be not any management action, i.e. in a normal workout scenario as a bank, you are trying to get equity in or whatever, and you're restructuring. This modeled scenario does not take that into account.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
Next question comes from the line of Mr. Benjamin Goy of Deutsche Bank. Your line is open, sir.
Yes, good morning. Two questions left, please. The first one, could you update us on your IB&I stock, or basically ask the other way around, shall we expect more releases in H2 from your domestic corporate? And then secondly, are there any news on the leverage ratio? How do you view the US-European standoff, in particular the position of the FDIC, and whether you can update us on the impact on your leverage ratio?
Okay, let's start with the IPNI. Indeed, we are now in a subsequent, 7-8 quarters showing a lot of IPNI releases. This half year it was 130 compared to last half year 130. Your question was as to the commercial loan book. The largest release indeed on the IPNI in this half year was on that book, around 108. We don't expect the same amount of IPNI release in the second half, but still we do expect, as a result of the still improving Dutch economy, improving asset quality in the loan book, we still do expect IPNI releases in that book. And those IPNI releases actually very well compensate for the increased impairments, somewhat of the increased impairments we envisage in the ECT book.
With respect, Benjamin, your leverage ratio question, I think on the clearing part, we have, of course, seen a positive consultation paper in the first half of the year. We all replied before the 6th of July. They're looking into it right now. They will come back somewhere in the second half of the year. We don't know when. But, I mean, the consultation paper was definitely in the right direction. And when they will hopefully conclude that after consultation they can stick to that, hopefully, then that would mean for us, I would say, around 40 bips. Before that is, by the way, in legislation, European legislation, might take another year or something. But, of course, it's good that we know that it's going in the right direction. There was also in the leverage ratio consultation paper a part which was related to off-balance sheet requirements. And there, that was new. And there, that is actually a minus if we have to take that into part of the off-balance sheet commitments. If we have to take that into our leverage ratio exposure measure, of course, that's unclear. Can be significant. So I think a lot of pushback has been given by all the banks, but nevertheless, it's not clear what the end result of that will be. Hopefully, we will have all this information together with Basel IV at the end of this year.
Okay, thank you.
Next question comes from the line of Ms. Anke Reingen of RBC. Your line is open.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Just three questions as well. First, as a follow-up to the leverage ratio question, obviously there hasn't been any progress in the last quarter, but aside from changes in regulation, how much more you think you can improve the ratio organically? And then secondly, on the cost-income ratio, just to confirm, the 56 to 60% cost-income ratio for 2017, that still stands as a target. And then lastly, just on asset quality trends in the second quarter, so there was quite a big jump in impaired loans in the oil exposure. Is there some seasonality in there, or is it really like the underlying trends? I mean, obviously you had higher ECT provisions, but still quite a big jump. And in light of this, the corporate loans, the coverage ratio dropped quite a bit versus year-end to 54.9% versus 59% year-end. Is this a level you feel comfortable with? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. With respect to the leverage ratio, indeed no progress in 3.7, 3.7 Q1, Q3. Organically means balance sheet developments. We've, of course, tried to optimize as much as possible. We see balance sheet not really growing. So, I mean, it's relatively static, I would say. Then, of course, there's profit retention. The part we do not dividend out is, of course, taken into account in the leverage ratio, which is positive. And finally, normally in the fourth quarter, we see a lower balance sheet than during the year, so that helps a bit in that quarter. But as said, that is not a full year effect. So that's what you've seen this year as well. I think it was a 3.8 start of the year, and then 3.7. So it helps a bit, but that is organically there will be a slow. Where we saw an improvement, a clear improvement, of course, was related to 81 when we did that one. That of course is when you do a billion, of course, immediately 20 to 25 bips. But we will go gradually into that direction of 4%. We're not worried about that. And by the way, that 4% is still being discussed, by the way, also in the Basel Committee, as you know, for large banks, very large banks, there's the 4%. And perhaps they look at some bucketing there. But of course, we know that in the Netherlands is also a vision on it. And then finally, I think that's also important. We have had, due to IFRIC, new guidance on IFRS, also net cash pooling inclusion in balance sheet. And we try now to lower as much as possible the effects there for the balance sheet by sweeping those two positions actually, or to change contracts. CI, still a target, 56, 60 and 2017.
I'll take that question on impaired exposures. The trend of the asset quality in the book is that in all the books except for the corporate loan portfolio, we see a decreasing trend of impaired exposures. Somewhat increased is indeed the impaired exposures in the corporate loan portfolio, mainly driven by new impaired files in ECT clients, mainly related to oil and gas industry. I explained, I think, earlier in the call, due to the challenging market circumstances in the sector. The impacted exposures, they have relatively low coverage ratios, while reversals in this portfolio, mainly related to commercial clients, I was just talking about it, the IPNI releases, they're exposures with higher coverage ratios. So it results net in a lower coverage ratio of the whole corporate loan book of around 55. Compared with 59, your question, do we feel comfortable? We already felt comfortable with the 5.9. We still feel comfortable with the 5.5. On the whole of the bank, that's also important because you mentioned the number of 50, I recall, of your question, which is the overall coverage ratio. There, indeed, you see also the same trend, somewhat a lower coverage ratio as a result of a somewhat higher impaired exposure and some lower stock of the provisions, but still a very prudent and comfortable coverage ratio figure.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Next question comes from the line of Mr. Albert Ploeg of ING Bank. Your line is open, sir.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for allowing me to ask the questions. The first question is on a bit strategic. I saw on slide 2 you mentioned to have identified some areas for selective international growth. Is it basically largely organic, or also can it include some non-organic growth as well? And also in relation to the cost-income ratio outlook, I expect basically normally that first you will have cost before you will have the benefit from that expansion, so you maybe can talk around that a little bit. And the second question is on the mortgage book in the Netherlands and the outlook therefore, especially quite some new initiatives in the market in the first half, also, of course, increasing competition from insurance companies. What do you see happening in trends in terms of the margins on the front book, and also what is the margin compared still to the back book? Do you see basically pressure coming on the front book or not? Thank you.
Okay, your question on our strategy in the corporate bank in surrounding countries. We base it on organic growth, but there may be inorganic opportunities to look at, then we'll look at that. But our basis hypothesis is that it will be organically and using the Amsterdam infrastructure. Then on the mortgage pricing case?
Yeah, as mentioned, there is more competition in the market, no doubt. And indeed, pension funds, new entrants are in the market as well. Insurance companies, of course, this is an area where there is still yield for financial institutions, so people go there. Yeah, it's also true that pension funds and insurance companies, of course, because half of the market or more is now going in the direction of, well, not only 10 years mortgage, but say 15 or even 20 years. So indeed, that part is increasing. We are still also operating in that area and make good margins there as well. That's one of the reasons, by the way, that we have done 2 covered bonds in the last 9 months. Who were 15 years covered bonds. In the past, we did shorter ones. We did a couple of billion in that direction covered bonds, so that's helpful. And as I said, the margins we still see increase are better for new deals than with respect to the back book, and we expect it to continue for the rest of the year. But as I said before, next year we don't expect that. And then, of course, big uncertainty is always December with respect to the book. We expect the book to be stable. But December is always a month where we see a large prepayments, where people look at their financial position and then sometimes use the savings to prepay the mortgage. And sometimes also fiscal authorities make special arrangements that you can... we've seen that in the past, that you can give money to your children or whatever, subsidized by the fiscal authorities, and that of course then is also of relevance. So that is always a bit of a big unknown at the end of the year, and in the last couple of years at least, we saw a minus in that period. But as said, we are well placed at the moment. We are number one in the market last year, and this year we are, well, I think it's a second position, but very close to the first position. So we feel very comfortable still with this market and with the margins and so on.
And maybe one follow-up on the remark earlier that you basically foresee a stable mortgage book. Is that basically a remark on the absolute level, or do you feel more, let's say, comfortable to start at least having the same kind of stable market share in the Netherlands? So if the market grows, that you might basically grow alongside with it.
When we communicate about it, it's more about the notional value, actually.
Okay. Yeah.
Next question comes from the line of Miss Alicia Chung of Exane. Your line is open.
Morning, everyone. Just a couple of questions from me. Firstly, would you be able to give a bit of colour on what is driving the lower hedge accounting related results in the group functions? And then secondly, I see that you've significantly reduced your cash balances. Is there something specific going on there? Are you managing down liquid assets, or is this just some volatility? And actually, if I could just have one more, could you give any color on your structural hedge position more broadly, for example, around the notional hedge side, yield, spread, maturity, and how you expect to manage it in the current lower for longer rates environment? Thank you.
Well, the hedge effects, the first question, we have a lot of positions, a lot of books, of course, which we hedge differently, macro, micro, and sometimes we have ineffectiveness of a hedge. And that is not easy to forecast. That, of course, is only noticed backwards. And sometimes there are positive results, sometimes negative. Last year we had a positive result. This year, actually, I think both first and second quarter, we saw negative results there. So ineffectiveness of hedges, which then we can't use the hedge and then have to take a negative result there. I take this third question together, and then Erik, you can do the second on cash. With respect to our hedge policy in general, I think that is explained, I think, in our investor presentation, which will be on, well, it wasn't the last one, but it will also be in the one we will put on the website, this afternoon. And there, what we've said before is that that we hedge actually a portfolio, of course, the large portfolios, mortgages and savings via macro hedges. We swap most of it back to 3 months
floating.
And then of course we have also large operations like when we do a funding deal or our liquidity buffer. We also swap to floating, but we do that individually with respect to the wholesale funding. And that's, I think, the liquidity buffer we do on 6 months. All in all, then in ALCO, we take a position on our vision on interest. Well, that, of course, these days is with a flat curve, is, of course, a cautious one. There's not much pickup along the curve, so we take a significant duration. And then, of course, we also look at stress tests with respect to several stress tests, but the one that we communicate also in our Q report now is on if there is a 200 bips decline or rise in interest rates, what will happen in the next 12 months? And then you can see that when there is an increase of 200 bips, that our NII will increase in the first year by 3%, if we don't do anything, by the way, so, of course, we might do something in the 12 months, but when it goes down by 200 bips, then there is a decrease of 2.3%. So yeah, we try to keep our net interest income as stable as possible via our hedge policy, and we do it in a cautious way this moment in time due to the flat curve.
Maybe to add on the cash part, we continue to search for yield because keeping a liquidity buffer is quite expensive. So we have invested 4 billion out of the cash and have put it into our long-term portfolio. And other than that, we paid back the TLTRO in June. And those are the two main contributors to the reduction of the cash position.
I would like to add one thing. Thank you very much, Erik. I would like to add one thing. The hedge accounting I mentioned, ineffectiveness, is then an accounting ineffectiveness. That's important. I would like to mention it's not that the hedge itself is ineffective.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Next question comes from the line of Mr. Kiwi Vijayaraja of Barclays. Your line is open.
Yes, good morning, guys. Just some follow-up questions on the large corporate expansion plan in Western Europe. What's your aspiration in terms of kind of likely volumes or RWAs when that business kind of reaches steady state? And when you're thinking about growing that business, is there some sort of thinking to maybe rebalance the overall portfolio away from your ECT exposures, which are kind of relative to other banks? You know, your overall ECT exposures are pretty large, and you know some diversification there. Or is, you know, in your minds, is that just pretty the growth in Western Europe that's kind of unrelated? And in terms of funding that business, do you think you'll need to offer loss-making deposits that you're going to maybe collect off these corporates on day one in order to generate the business. So just how you're tackling that particular issue as well would be helpful. Thanks.
Well, the expansion in Western Europe is not to compensate for the ECT book. It is, of course, to compensate a bit for the large concentration on the Dutch economy. So we already stated before that we aim to grow our international revenues from below 20% in the area of 20 to 25%, so it fits with that purpose. It won't be revolutionary, we do that gradually, so it will take quite some time before we are in the steady state, so to say. Because what we do not want is to attract all kinds of clients which cannot have an opportunity at other banks. They should choose for us because of the quality of our expertise and the quality of our services, and not because they are unbankable. So that takes a careful approach, and that will take time, but nevertheless we set it in place. ECT, we are certainly not we are not declining that book. On the contrary, our global activities are well appreciated, and we should look a bit through the cycle also in that area. So we will pick up other financing possibilities for clients in fields like food and natural resources. Of course, it helps to diversify our loan books from a risk point of view. Growing our Western European corporate activities is also positive from a diversification point of view.
Then your funding question, will you do it with loss-making deposits? No, of course, we will try to do as much with wholesale funding, which these days, of course, is cheap. So that is, of course, primarily the way we're going to finance.
Okay, understood. Thank you very much.
Next question comes from the line of Mr. Brijesh Kumar of Societe Generale. Your line is open, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, all. Just one follow-up question for me. Can you please provide some color on issuance plans for the rest of 2016 or, say, 2017? Especially around sub-debt, and also if you could, do you have any clarity on resolution strategy which will impact your senior issuance eventually? Thank you.
Eric?
Yes, very good question. On the funding side, we already issued 2.4 billion in year two this year. That's more or less the part we needed to do so. This is all focused on being MREL compliant by 2018, so we will continue to issue sub-debt up until there is clarity on your second point, the resolution, let's say, regime, which will be implemented in Europe. There are all kinds of, let's say, rumors that it's going to be a French proposal, but as far as this is not finalized, we will again continue to issue sub-debt to meet the MREL targets. That's a very clear and sound strategy, and in our view, that's the best way to protect also the senior unsecured funding we have. Your second question, the funding plans we still have in 2016, we already issued close to 9 billion in 2016. The second half will be quiet. Already in December, we expected 2016 to be a bit of a volatile year because of Brexit uncertainty, elections in the second half. So we moved the largest part of the funding to the first half of the year. And with hindsight, I think we took the right decision there. The second half will be very limited, and if at all, we would issue some dollars. Then on 2017, I cannot give any clarity yet because this is also related to the next 6 months will show from a development perspective. But in general, you can say that what we have funded this year, that somewhere between 10 and 15 billion when the year is finished, that this is more or less the range you can expect us to continue to issue over the next couple of years.
Okay, that's quite helpful. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, before moving on to the next question, just a reminder, in order to ask your questions, you may still press star 1. Next question comes from the line of Mr. Robin van den Broek of Mediobanca. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Focusing on NII, I was wondering if you could give us some more clarity if there are any one-offs in there. You do mention a release in retail. Could you confirm that that's less than 10 million? And I was also wondering what kind of TLTRO uptick did you take and what rate are you using within NII going forward? I assume it's zero, but maybe you can confirm that. And also going forward, how aggressive will AB Namro be in refinancing with TLTRO? Next to that, I also was wondering if you have any visibility on where deposit rates for retail can go in the Netherlands. Do you think 20 bips is the absolute lower bound, or do you actually think it can go zero or even negative? Second question is on the stress test read-through. Are there any assumptions within the stress test for the mortgage book that could imply that the EBA is not very lenient to make a specific of a special situation of the quality of the Dutch mortgage book, which could also give some negative read-through on potential output floors in Basel IV? And the last question would be on the mortgage market in more general. I think we had a mortgage credit directive noise, I think yesterday or the day before, that people were should be able to refinance at no cost. I think that's been brought down by the Association of Banks in the Netherlands. That basically, what the Dutch banks are doing is in line with this directive. Can you confirm that? And second, do you expect any changes to tax incentives imposed by the government? I think there's an increasing voice going on that, given the fact that rates are low, that the government should also enact on that by bringing down these tax incentives. I would be anxious to hear your view there as well. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your three times three questions. that reminds me of a joke that you have... three kinds of bankers who can count and bankers who cannot count. But
shall I take the NII question? I think the NII figure you see is a clean one. TLTRO, we did not do a pickup in the first tranche. We might do in the second and the third tranche. And we do not give guidance on deposits because that is seen by competition authorities as collaborations between banks. But what you can do is, of course, look backwards. But it is clear that, of course, the closer you get to zero, the more difficult it becomes. And then with respect to stress test, I think...
That's kind of a difficult question. I mean, it's fair to say that given a couple of assumptions in the current EBA stress test, indeed, banks with a larger, but banks in general, banks with a larger mortgage book are hit worst, actually. So that is one thing to one remark to make. The assumption of the stress test in terms of transfer from performing to non-performing, static balance sheet, etc., doesn't help, of course. The only way I would like to answer your question, or can answer your question, is probably that it seems to be that EBA or whatever other organization has been pretty harsh on the Netherlands in terms of the downturn compared to the uptick currently and the downturn in the GDP figures in the stress test. As for all the three years, there is a minus in the stress test.
Maybe to add on the mortgage book and the possibilities that will have implications on the Basel outcome. I don't think that's the case because in the stress test we used our modeling we already have, and it's certainly not an argument to have a different approach than the present modeling. So I don't think there's an impact from this EBA stress test towards the Basel conclusions.
And then the last one, TLTRO, whether we take the 0% into account when calculating our NII. That's first of all depending on whether you will hedge this TLTRO, which we are of the opinion we shouldn't do. And if so, then obviously you take the 0% into account. So that's quite a simple one. And all the rest has been answered by Kees already on the TLTRO side.
And the mortgage credit directives with an attempt to harmonize refinancing obligations of clients?
We don't see much impact from that.
Okay.
Mr. Zalm, no more questions.
Okay. Well, thanks for everybody for calling in, and hope to speak to you next time.
Thanks, bye.
Thanks, bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, this will conclude today's presentation. Thank you for attending. You may now disconnect your phones, and we hope you have a very nice day.